The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So my way of understanding this kind of breath meditation on the 16 steps is that all along, there's a whole series of things you pay attention to. Pay attention to breathing in, breathing out, you pay attention to calming the breathing, settling it, pay attention to your bodily formations, the bodily activity, what's going on, the tension, the holdings, things going on in the body. You pay attention to the joy that comes up, the happiness, pleasure, and a variety of other things as we go along here in the 16 steps. And all along, there's a constant rhythm. The music has constant rhythm, constant beat. It's in the background or in the foreground, depending. And that's the breathing. And as you get good at this, you won't miss a single breath. You just be with all the breaths, in-breath, out-breath. There's always this constancy that's there. And then with that constancy there, however, the mind takes in, the awareness takes in other aspects of your experience besides the breathing. And it isn't something you have to kind of scan around and search for to understand. It's more like you're very present for the breath, but then you're taking in other things come in to awareness, or you allow other things to come into awareness. You become aware of the tension in your body, holding. You're aware of the tension in the mind, or the activity of the mind, the movements of the mind for and against things. And so part of the value of this constancy with the breath is the breath is kind of like the lubricator. The breath is constantly moving and oscillating in rhythm. And so as you stay with that, it's a little bit, as long as that stays with the rhythm of the breathing, it's a little bit harder to get stuck on something. Because if you get stuck, the chances are is your breathing will somehow be interfered with. You'll hold your breath a little bit more, or you'll tighten up in some way. But if you can keep your breath relaxed and smooth, then I call it the lubricator. It kind of keeps everything lubricated and relaxed. And you'll notice when you get caught. And so for a lot of people, I think, just a tremendous amount of benefits come from just staying with the breath. And in your own time, you'll become aware of other aspects of your experience. But you just keep staying there with the breath. And the breath, staying with the breath, it kind of frees up, relaxes a lot of the other things. But in addition to that, it's also possible then to intentionally have this practice of calming, relaxing, tranquilizing these different things. When it's you do that practice when it's possible. And when it's not possible to do it, then you don't do it. And you don't try to force the issue or feel discouraged with, oh, I can't, but I seem to relax my body. It just doesn't want to relax. Sometimes you can't be in charge. And so part of meditation then is, giving up your agenda and just learning to just be with what is, be at ease with what is, rather than trying to make things be different than how they are. So this constancy of breathing in, breathing out, and that's something that's kind of very helpful in daily life as well, and developing a touchstone with your breathing. So on a regular basis, or quite a bit of the time, you actually know what's going on with your breathing. You're in touch with the breathing. It's kind of like, again, this rhythm or this beat that's always there in the background. And so there's many situations in life where talking to people or driving or cleaning dishes at home or something, the part of me is in touch with my breathing, knows what's going on there. It's a helpful way of staying grounded or centered or present with that breath. And in some Buddhist traditions I know, they really emphasize a lot. No matter what you're doing, you're always in touch with your breathing. Breathing kind of is like this. So your attention is a little bit divided in a sense between part of you and the breath and the body and part of you with whatever else you're doing. When I, reminds me a little bit aside, but when I was in Zen monasteries, we were expected to continue meditating during Dharma talks. Sit there in full kind of Zen posture and stay with the breath. And what I learned was that that if I stayed very present for my body and for my breathing as I breathed, that I was still, my attention was still open to hear what was being said, but I wasn't focusing on it, I wasn't thinking about it, and it would just kind of come through me, and I'd hear it in the very, you know, I didn't miss a single word of the talk, whereas if I was listening to the talk and then trying to, you know, oh, that was a great idea, and go off on a tangent about that, oh, I missed, I wouldn't do anything with the talk, I would just, it would just kind of come, in a sense, come through or come into me. And I'd be very, very present for the talks. And the idea that sometimes was taught to me was that in that kind of state, what you need to hear will sink in. And what you don't need to hear, you probably won't remember. And so many times I wouldn't remember some of the talk. But I always loved the talks. And anyway. So the constancy, staying with the breath, letting the breath be in the middle of it all. So do you have any comments or questions or any reports you'd like to make about how this has been today so far, or this last meditation, or anything at all?
So, excuse me. So there was some interesting contrast from this morning when we had the blowers going on. The blowers in my neighborhood go on Thursday. So I said, oh, isn't this interesting? It's day after we heard it yesterday. And my mind was reacting to it. I said, I came here for this, you know. And then as I settled in, there was this feeling of not quite enjoying it, but sort of that misery loves company, and I'm here with this wonderful group experiencing it, so it's not so bad. And then in the last two sitting meditations, the one on where you had us focus on joy, the one before this one, I was really feeling like a ball of joy. I mean, it was really going strong, and then the back started going in the knees, and I said, oh, this would be great if I can just get rid of that pain. So I had these preferences come up, and then all of a sudden that joy disappeared. So I said, okay, Dennis, you blew it, let go. So I let go, and then I settled into a lesser intensity, but it was still cool, you know. And then this last one, when the pain started coming on, all I did was adjust. I brought my knee up, so it wasn't, the complaining mind wasn't coming in. I just adjusted, used the great metaphor about the boat, the sailboat, and I just adjusted my knee and settled in right to the end. It was quite beautiful, actually. And so this past week, I've been reading a lot of Ajahn Chah's works and Samedho and so forth, and I didn't quite get the part about that the joy is going to pass, so don't get attached to it, and of course the suffering doesn't last, you know, and don't get clinging to that state. But I had a real experience today of what that really is. Mm-hmm. So I sort of feel it was like a beginner's mind experience. I know this to be true from previous experiences, but we quickly forget and we shut down. And mm-hmm. it was nice to re-experience that.
So a more deeper experience of how things pass and change. And so you can be a little more at ease with how it is, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant.
Right. Because you could easily get a little disillusioned with the part about not getting clingy with the good stuff. You can get to a point where, well, then why bother if it's going to go away, you know? But I can see it more, I saw it more clearly.
But there's two sides of it going away. There's a side, the natural, everything's impermanent, so that sooner or later meditative joy will pass as well. Just the normal way, you go back to a normal state of mind, perhaps. But there's also, it goes away when the practice deepens. So it's not only a sign that, you know, just that you go back to your old way. But it also, we're hoping, as meditation deepens, we're hoping your joy goes away. But it gives away to something that's much more satisfying.
Thank you.
And also, when you're practicing more of concentration practice, where you're really kind of cultivating the joy and the strength of it, then it's completely appropriate to very gently change your posture so that you can kind of stay in that flow. Whereas often when you do straight mindfulness practice, then the instructions generally would be more you just stay with whatever's there and you don't adjust. So you adjusted, that was great.
I found the visual and the visual imagery that came up in the analogies and metaphors you used today very calming, and almost in a sensual way, just very calming for me and very pleasurable. And it was very easy for me to still busy thoughts that might start by thinking of that clean white cotton blanket around me after just coming out of a pool. And I built on these images using places I actually had been, like a particular lake where I remember swimming after a hot hike. And this was very pleasurable for me today. But a little bit of something was nagging and wondering whether I was indulging too much in fantasy or... just wanted your ideas on that.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, it's possible you were indulging, but it's not the worst thing in the world. and if the indulging was keeping you connected and involved and deepening, then maybe it's okay. But if the indulging gets in the way, then you want to let go of it. But every attachment we have isn't necessarily a hindrance. If you're having joy and delight in meditation and you're a little bit attached to it, so you stay more connected in a nice way, you know, maybe it's helpful. If you get too attached, you'll kill it. So indulging might have been okay. And if you pay attention, sooner or later you'll notice, you'll find out when what you're doing is not appropriate or when it's off, you know, stressful or somehow off. And so I would just be relaxed with it all until you get the signals, the cues, clear enough that this is something's off here. And sometimes you discover you're off when you're indulging and it goes fine, then it stops going fine. And then you're left, you know, hanging onto nothing. You know, oh no, you know, I guess I went overboard there. So that's simple, it's one answer to your thing. And the other is that I was actually trying to use images for people for whom images are a helpful way of learning, to get a kind of visceral or imagal sense of how to go forward here in the practice. And so I'm glad that it worked for you. And so there might be simple ways to use imagery for you to help you get more connected. But when you do Vipassana practice, it's okay to use that, but you don't want to use it too much either. You don't want to make a habit of using it. Because you're using kind of a little bit of a crutch then. Mm-hmm. And so maybe to get you started, it's okay. But then what you want to do is drop all images. Because images are always, with an image, you're always experiencing your life through the image. It's mediated experience. So what you want to do in Vipassana is you want to be much more intimate, much more direct to what's happening, not through the image.
Was that mediated experience that you said?
Mediated, yeah.
Mediated.
You know, so
there's something between myself and the experience by having this metaphor.
What comes to mind is just many years ago, I asked someone what they were feeling, what they were experiencing, and he said, I feel like I have these heavy football pads on my shoulder. And so that's an image. So he was experiencing something, and he was reporting something real, but the way he was experiencing or understanding it was through the idea of football pads. And then I said, well, if you drop the image, what are you actually experiencing? Oh, it's heavy and tight and in a sense of protected. And so that's closer. That's more closer in. So in Vipassana, you want to get closer in than you can if you stay with the image. But for the purpose of getting concentrated, getting focused and present, initially some people find it helpful to have an image to kind of get there. But again, the warning is don't rely on it. Don't get dependent on it. Just use a little bit and then be willing to let go of it.
So, Gail, how would you then contrast this? This felt, in some respect, as a guided visualization. And when I teach yoga sometimes, I'll say I'm going to take you through a guided meditation on the breath, but I'm really using a lot of visuals,
right?
Because a lot of people who maybe do yoga don't necessarily sit, have a sitting practice. And then my mind shifts to what the Tibetan Buddhists do. They use a lot of visualization. So it seems to be effective for them. I just wanted your comment about the contrast between the two.
Well, there are all-out visualization practices you can do. In Tibetan Buddhism, they have a variety of different functions. And in Theravada Buddhism, there's some visualization practices as well. They have particular functions. As I said earlier, I mean, generally in Vipassana practice, we don't use visualization because visualizations are taken to be kind of another form of thinking. And we're trying to get more direct than through thinking. And part of the reason I did the visualization, these images today, was that I wanted to try to convey some of these teachings in a way that was, you know, that kind of went in deeper or more understandable. And my hope was that by doing a guided meditation this way, some of you would get more settled, more concentrated, more into it in a deeper way, so that some of these instructions would make more sense. They wouldn't be so abstract or distant. And I have very little expectation that some of you did get still and concentrated in some ways. I have no expectation that it's going to be that easy again. You know, and for some people, it's a lot easier to do it guided. And I'd be doing a very poor job as a teacher if people started getting dependent on guidance to do this work. And when the guidance stops and you're left on your own, that's when the work really begins. And then you kind of back to square one. You have to work through all the stuff, and but that's really healthy stuff to do. But so to repeat myself, part of the hope with the guided meditation was to give you a visceral sense of some possibilities, some deepening, understanding the instructions, where it's all going, what's possible, so that maybe on another day long, we sit all day without instructions or retreat, or sometimes at home in home practice, maybe you drop into some deeper place, and then you're familiar with it from what we did here. That was kind of behind what I was doing. Does that answer your question? You want to ask again?
Yeah, no, that answers it. And then on you have the introductory meditation session. So do you think you tend to use more visuals for people who are just getting into this? Or
when I do my intro class, I do some little bit of visualization, but not as much as today, no way.
Okay.
Because I think for an intro class where you're kind of giving people the basic instruction, I think it's important to try to do it more accurately, to get the habit or get the idea. How that, you know, so like how they get imprinted first, and if what they get imprinted is a lot of guided visualization meditation, they're going to get a whole different understanding of what mindfulness is.
Okay, thanks.
I just wanted to say it was really interesting from this morning to this afternoon in terms of really noticing how much energy goes into the thinking process and how painful that was. I really noticed it this morning. Wow, you know, there's a lot of energy in keeping the thinking going. You know, and as soon as you can let go of the thinking and just letting the thoughting go, it takes much less energy. And so this afternoon, it was really a nice contrast in terms of how quiet and how calm everything can be and how much less efforting is required.
People who are, all of us, I guess, when we're completely caught up in our thoughts and thinking a lot and all that, we're kind of distracted distracted from distractions by distractions. Mm-hmm. And so distracted, we don't really see the cost, the energy cost, the effect it has. We're so much concerned with, you know, the shopping list and what we have to get. We don't realize that being so concerned with getting all this stuff is very tiring because we're focusing on the things. So when you stop and pay attention like we do here, you can start feeling the cost or the impact it has in the tiring. And it's into this quieting, tranquilizing of the mental activity. Not only is, you can hopefully feel very pleasant and nice, but also you conserve a lot of energy. And so that plays, especially if you've meditated a lot, that plays itself out in a number of different ways. One is you don't need as much sleep, especially on retreat where you're meditating a lot. And the other is that I don't know exactly what the physiology of this is, but I do know that as people get concentrated in meditation, the breath gets more and more subtle. Breathe less and less and less until at some point you can't be aware that you're breathing at all. Just doesn't seem, there's no movement, no activity of breathing at all. And so, you know, what's the physiology of that? And I suspect that some of it is that because when you're really concentrated, the mind is still, that you're not using so much sugar anymore. You know, you're not using as much energy. And somewhere I read that the major energy sink in the body is the brain. And it uses a lot. And so if your brain activity is not so active and busy, that you don't need as much energy. If you don't need so much energy, you don't need as much sugar in your blood. You know, you don't need, but the blood doesn't need to, of course, you know, provide you with so much. And so everything quiets down, calms down. And you're still, everything else is taken care of well enough. You know, you get plenty of energy, nourishment for the ordinary, normal thing. But you don't need it for your neurosis anymore. And so breathing calms down quite a bit. And some people find also that eating, like on retreats, that their eating drops as well. They don't need to eat as much because there's not that much need for energy anymore. And some of that has to do because they're not being active. But again, a lot of that has to do with the mind being more at ease, more rested. Yes? Move past the mic.
What I noticed in the last sitting, how energizing for me tapping into the stillness was.
Good.
I wondered if maybe that's part of it, that the mind is using less energy and I was kind of really feeling more like a life sustaining energy of the stillness.
Beautiful, beautiful.
I saw at one point restlessness came up and I looked at the restlessness and I literally saw it just dissipating away in the background, the stillness flooding over. It was a wonderful experience.
So this is a more energized state. Did it feel clean?
I did not feel clean. I felt a comfort.
Comfort in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yes. Yeah, so I think that I tried to say that earlier today is that as we get more relaxed and more concentrated, more present. It's not just a sinking energy thing. There's this kind of clean or kind of more energized life force energy that kind of comes up. And often it becomes really easy to hold the body straight then. You know, before until the kind of the energy is going or the concentration is going, you kind of slumping over and straightening up. And then, wow, it's effortless now to keep myself up. It's kind of an effortless feeling, but there's energy, there's crispness there, clarity is kind of happening. And that kind of energy is a whole different thing than the kind of energy that's required for a lot of thinking or reacting or liking and not liking. So I'm happy for you. It's good. Some people, it's like, sometimes I talk about desire and aversion being the caffeine of the soul. And it keeps people's energy going and going and going. And then when you stop drinking caffeine, some people have this withdrawal period of a few days and they get headaches and low energy and all that. And then, but if they wait 3 or 4 days and I guess the system clears out, then this natural energy can be there. It's not there if you're always pumped up caffeine. So the same thing with the people, you're being pumped up with desire and aversion, and you stop using that caffeine for source of energy, then there might be a period of withdrawal where a person actually gets kind of dull and tired and depressed and kind of low. And then once the withdrawal passes, then this more beautiful energy, natural energy, comes up. Anyway, thank you. I hope you all know that there's no shoulds in meditation. So there's one should, and the one should generally is just be with how you are, and how you are is the door. And so rather than thinking you have to change yourself or measure yourself against some standard of how what's supposed to happen, if some of you, you know, I was asking you to feel some joy and the joy didn't happen, or I feel stillness and the stillness didn't happen, or if nothing that I talked about was happening for you today, that doesn't mean that it was a mistake or a failure or a problem for you. Just what's happening. The winds are blowing a particular way today. And so you have to, you know, you have to move the sails in a particular way. And so the practice is always you. The practice is always how you are, not how someone else is talking about it, not how it's being guided here today or something. And hopefully the guidance is helpful and useful and carries you along in some new way or teaches you something. But please, don't hold something up as the way you're supposed to be or what's supposed to happen. I have tremendous trust and confidence in the value of just being present with how you are and having a lot of respect for how you are. And the word respect means in Latin, I guess it comes from Latin, means to look again. So respect, just look again. That's enough. Look more deeply. So thank you. And then next month we'll start with the third tetrad, the third aspect. We're halfway through these 8 steps, these 16 steps. And the next time we have this is the end of February, February 29th. So thank you very much.